Welcome back, readers and romance seekers, to Hopelessly Romantic Behind the Page. If you were under the range of that massive snowstorm that we all had last week, like me, I hope that you are safe and warm and not under too much snow. We got maybe a foot around here. And I really do hope that you enjoyed last week's episode. So let's go ahead and take one more look at it, shall we? I will definitely say that Master of the Mountain was certainly a huge departure from what we've been reading so far. It even outshines all of the non-Harlequin books that we've read so far as the spice level goes. Even with my favorites of the Shifters of Beaumont, doesn't even come close. So Master of the Mountain was, very, very different. But this is really what I was looking for when I started this podcast. I wanted wild and raunchy, and I really didn't have any idea that it would take me this long to find it. Again, I had those preconceptions, misconceptions of what Harlequin was. And it was something that I had to have prior knowledge about already. So really what that means is if I already wasn't aware of Cherise Sinclair as an author, I don't know if she would have ever really gotten on my radar. When I go hunting for books, when I started this, I would go right into the bookstore and I would head in for the romance section. And it was easy to look at the Harlequins because they're all right there together on one top of the shelf. So it was a little bit more of a challenge for me to find other things. These days, I do a lot of my online shopping, or I do all of my shopping online more or less. And I can now start relying on maybe the data mining algorithms when they say, oh, she's looking at these kinds of things. So here's the Barnes & Noble suggestions page for more like this. So if I had been reading other books, I don't know if Sinclair would ever have gotten to my radar. If it did, it would have been through that data mining algorithm. So it's interesting. That story that I told was really true, I promise. It really was a former coworker of mine who told me about Sinclair. Way back when certain novels that should not be named were raging in popularity, it was really, really very difficult to avoid the wave of their popularity, even if I hadn't have been a bookworm. These books were everywhere. I did give the first novel a fair shake, I'll admit to that, and I promptly regretted it. To this day, it remains the only book that I have ever returned for a full refund to the seller. So, as a result, I was introduced to the Masters of the Shadowlands, like I mentioned in the episode, and I was pretty happy with the story that I found. With this admission, yes, I am not completely unfamiliar with erotic romance, but in my defense, this is something that kind of occasionally happens with me, with my reading habits, or even when I'm just consuming certain media. See, I know what I like. Like, I like fantasy, I like adventure, urban fantasy, magical girls, chosen ones, you know how it goes. But every now and again, I will stumble into a bit of media that just doesn't align with any of my interests at all, and for some reason, I just kind of dig my claws into it. One really good example of this could actually be seen with this old manga series that I read back in high school called Mars. It was in my high school library. They had a whole section for manga, and the name caught my attention because, you know, mythology nerd, Mars, the god of war. But the setup had absolutely zero crossovers with any of my interests. It was about a shy high school girl who loves art. She is a drawing prodigy. She wants to go to art school, but she doesn't necessarily have the resources to be able to do that. And she falls in love with the resident motorcycle bad boy in the high school. I guess you could say it like that. It was every inch the soap opera that it appeared to be, and I loved it for whatever reason. So while I was reading things like Sailor Moon and Sarah's Celestial Legend, Mars was very much the outlier. Sinclair's work became one of those exceptions. It probably doesn't help that the Shadowlands series took place in a Florida city that I was very familiar with, So much so where I could actually imagine where this place could be. I could imagine, like, you know, I had like a personal connection to the setting itself. Like, I could feel like the humidity, or I could understand when characters describe something. It's like, yes, I understood this, and it kind of connected me to it. And while I haven't caught up with her latest releases, for the last years or so, but I am thinking that it should be time to start putting more physical copies onto my shelves for nostalgia's sake. I don't know if the Shadowlands series will ever end, but if it ever does, that's probably when I'll maybe go all in on buying like a box set or something, because we gotta have those. I have to have the set. That's another thing about me. The books have to match. If I am reading a series and the publisher changes the book cover design shape halfway through, I'm not happy. It really upsets me. I don't know why. Anyway, I digress. Other than the setting for Shadowlands, I'm not sure why it resonated with me as much as it did. I was a very different person when I started reading those novels, and even with, you know, the benefit of hindsight, I'm not exactly sure what past Heather was thinking when she threw her paycheck at Sinclair every chance she got. So I guess one big question that we can look at is, why do I give Sinclair's work a pass, considering its subject matter, and not offer that same grace to certain other novels? Why are these rich dominants with crazy cool toys okay, and not that other guy? Well, you've heard me say it before, and I am going to say it again. Context matters. The doms from Sinclair's novels don't cross the kinds of boundaries that were trampled by that so-called walking red flag. The people in these books, in Sinclair's books, feel real. They behave in realistic ways, and they have reasonable reactions. For the most part, I mean, you know, erotic romance can only be so realistic. In any short erotic romance, realism is not exactly on the table, but at least they should be relatable. So, given that Sinclair took the time to explain to the reader that real romance takes time, and to explain that doms in the real world are not perfect mind readers, it only solidifies my opinion that she actually cares about the audience she is trying to reach. While one author might have been chasing clout and views on that fanfiction page of hers, I genuinely believe that Sinclair puts a lot of careful thought into what she puts on the page. Is she perfect? No, but at least I feel like she gives a damn about her audience. I also do realize that while I am dragging this so-called unnamed series through the mud, I do know that I am not giving it the privilege of being named. This is on purpose, obviously, and I am sure you already know what these books are, and you know what I'm talking about. The trouble is that talking about BDSM in a literature context or in media at all, it's almost impossible these days without bringing up these books as, like, not a benchmark. I hate calling it a benchmark because they're not, that's not what they are. They're just a moment, a flash in the pan that just kind of took everybody and turned them crazy. You just can't talk about it without bringing these books up, and I hate it. They brought BDSM into the mainstream, but unfortunately, they did not do the subject any proper justice. There is also a lot to say about the social reaction to those novels. Reactions ranged from the pearl clutchers yelling at us to think of the children, to people declaring it that it was the greatest piece of media ever conceived, to reactions like mine wishing they could obliterate the entire franchise from the face of the earth for its depiction of an abusive relationship as romantic and desirable. I have since chilled my opinion a little bit on the subject, maybe by a tiny bit. But I do stand by my stance that it is hot garbage and not the fun kind. Twilight is fun hot trash, and I'll give Twilight a pass, but not the fanfiction that it spawned. But back to that social reaction. It was really interesting for me to watch the world suddenly reading erotic romance in public. People were reading this at work, at my job. It was completely wild. For us Americans, sex is shameful for a lot of us, especially in my generation, where they parked us into the sex education classes in sixth grade and said, told us that sex will kill us and then make us pregnant. And yeah, sex was only for marriage. You're ruined if you ever lose your virginity before you're married. And we certainly don't talk about what happens behind that closed door. And then this thing emerges from the pits of hell, and suddenly we are all fine with it. Wild, I tell you. It's ugh. And here I thought that I would be able to get through this without going into a rant about that book. Yeah. But from here on out, I will not bring those books up. They will not be reviewed, and I will not use them as comparisons. I will simply have to bring in more BDSM selections so that we can have a proper backlog of stories to look at. So let's actually talk about Master of the Mountain, though. How did you like it? Well, like I said, it's been one of my longtime favorites, but I quite enjoyed rereading it from the perspective of the podcast reviewer. Thinking about the story critically was a really fun exercise, and I'm glad that it didn't lessen my opinion of the book. Sure, it might have failed on certain metrics, but, you know, the perfect book doesn't exist, and doesn't mean it can't be fun. For our spicy rating, also, it's almost like night and day, right? The toys were something of a big interest, because we've never seen them in the books that we've read so far. I'm kind of surprised we hadn't seen them before, but also not surprised. It's a little complicated. I really think they should be more mainstream. I really think that, you know, I pick up a romance or an erotic romance, and I would like to see toys. I don't want to just see, you know, like I said, insert tab A into slot B, because there's more involved. But I really did appreciate the progression of toy inclusion as Rebecca and Logan's relationship developed. So it just starts with the two of them at the very beginning, in the morning after Logan saves Rebecca from freezing out on the porch. And he uses nothing but his hands. Full-out sex hasn't even happened yet, but we get that smallest taste of domination and submission in this very simple encounter. As time goes on, more gets added to the arsenal, as it were. Logan even discusses with Rebecca about the concept of trust and what he's willing to do with her. They go from mental restraints, i.e. Logan commanding Rebecca to keep her hands behind her head, to fully restraining her naked in a BDSM club on a cross, like an X cross, for all to see. Rebecca can almost act as a sort of stand-in for the audience if they're not familiar with BDSM. We can learn through her eyes. With all those toys again, so like there were more than I even remembered. I totally forgot about the butt plug. I was like, oh yeah, that happened. And you can see how Rebecca feels about it. And it's kind of incredible the way it just progresses. I really, really appreciated that. And again, referencing Sinclair's work, she has a wide range of domination styles that she's written about. Of course, we also see a wide range of submission styles as well. There's not just one type of submissive. They all don't just bow their heads, say yes, sir, and do as they are told. I really do think I want to bring up more of Sinclair's books on the podcast, just because she's got such a different collection, wide range of stories and different types of romances, and to get that range that I was talking about. And that's not even in the BDSM spokes. She's got menage stories, like, you know, more than two people. She's got shifters, and she even did one standalone sci-fi novel. I've not read that particular one, but I do think I need to put it on the list. Now, for now, though, I promise we will move on with other authors. With that, I think we can move on with what Heather read this week. Well, for now, I've actually got a couple of things on hold with my library app at the moment. Every time I think, oh, I want to read this, it's always on hold. So I haven't been able to keep up with my regular reading. However, I thought that this would be a really great opportunity to bring up some related literature for anyone who is curious about BDSM and its aspects. First, I'll start with a somewhat little bit of an outlier, mostly because it's a graphic novel versus a traditional literature novel. This is Sunstone. You might have already heard of this one, or at the very least, you might have even seen some art by its creator. It's a comic series by Stepan Sejic. I'm pretty sure I am not pronouncing that name correctly. He's from Croatia, and he does a lot of comic book art. He actually does one of my absolute favorite depictions of Wonder Woman. I love how he draws her. He started this as a kind of collections of sketches, Sunstone, on DeviantArt. It was under the account name Shinies with a Z. And after a while, people really, really got interested in it. And the artist, he's like, you know, I'm going to start collecting these. I'm going to refine them. And he put them into a single comic series. And that becomes Sunstone. The art is incredible. I really appreciate it. And it's gorgeous. And the romance between the two heroines is sweet and adorable. Yes, this is an LGBT-friendly novel. Slice of life, but with whips and chains. So what's not to love on that? I really, really kind of found this one by accident. Again, one of those outliers, like this is not necessarily in my scope of interest, but I love it anyway. The art, I mentioned, it's really incredible, but you see a little bit more of the theatrical side of BDSM in Sejic's work. You see, like, you know, a lot of latex, really complicated shibari designs, shibari with the rope and whatnot, and harnesses. He has a lot of really, really unique portrayals of, you know, BDSM performance and BDSM theater. So I think it's a really good opportunity to kind of get more of the flashy side if you want to look at that. Next is probably a little bit more of a controversial choice. But I think this book is worth mentioning just for its premise alone. To give a very simplified explanation on this subject, back in the 80s, the second wave of feminism was kind of falling to the wayside against new rising feminist ideals. As you know, the third wave feminism, like, you know, kind of came in, everything ebbs and flows. And this era is actually sometimes referred to as the feminist wars. One topic that found itself in the crosshairs of the wars was the idea that pornography was inherently damaging to women as a whole. On one side, we had the anti-pornography feminists, and on the other hand, we had the sex-positive and porn-positive feminists. It's very black and white, almost. I really, really encourage you to look this more up in depth, because that is not even an ounce of the ocean of what went on during this time period. But anyway, in the midst of this raging debate walks in Anne Rice. May she rest in peace. Yes, that Anne Rice with Interview with the Vampire Lady. During when all of this was going down, she decided to make a statement, and she wrote a trilogy of books under the name of A.N. Reliquaire. I believe. Hi, Hermes. Hello. Oh my god, it's not even close to dinner time. It's like in the middle of the day. Sorry about that. Anyway, they are The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty, Beauty's Punishment, and Beauty's Release. I'm actually just now learning as I'm looking this stuff up, just to make sure I've got all my facts right. Beauty's Kingdom, a fourth book, actually came out a couple of years ago, so I might have to track that one down. I hope it matches the books I already have, because, as we mentioned, it should match the series. Anyway, the story obviously plays on to the fairy tale of Sleeping Beauty, and it does take a walk down its original roots. The prince enters the cursed castle with everyone asleep eternally, and he finds the sleeping princess, and, well, he rapes her. There is no getting around this fact. She is asleep. She cannot consent to sex with him. And he does it anyway. This wakes up the princess and thus the entire castle. From here, the story pretty much departs from the original fairy tale, where the prince takes Beauty to his kingdom to enter into a period of sexual servitude. This was kind of wild. Her parents consented to this, by the way. So before the Beauty's kingdom fell under the spell, they had an agreement with a neighboring kingdom, now ruled by a woman called Queen Eleanor, that all of the royalty goes into service sexually for this kingdom. And the parents are like, yes, you can go do this. You have to go do this, and you will return a better person as a result. It's okay, yeah. A lot of controversy obviously comes from this non-consensual aspect of the story. Beauty doesn't have a say in what happens to her at all. And this understandably ruffles a lot of feathers. But it's still engaging, and like I have been screaming from the rooftops, context matters. This is a fantasy setting. It's meant to be unrealistic and a little off-kilter. And this will also be another book that will not be reviewed on this podcast because mostly it's bonkers. It's completely crazy. Romance, it's not so much romance because that doesn't exist really, maybe a tiny little bit, not exactly. But it doesn't also really focus in the scope of what we look at here. Mostly just because it's not a structured romance story. It's just sexcapades. It's wild. And there are also moments that I really, really don't want to touch because it was written in the 80s. So yeah. But having said all of that, if you want to wander out on the craziest of limbs, I'll send you in that direction. Finally, I'm going to go ahead and leave you with some required reading for anyone who wants to dive deeper into a realistic BDSM practice. This is SM 101 by Jay Wiseman. He is a highly respected author in the scope of the scene, as it's called. I also believe he's a bit of a lawyer as well. So definitely, definitely a good resource. It is a non-fiction introduction to the world of BDSM, and while it may be getting along in years, it's a little old, it's still an excellent resource for anyone interested in going deeper. So that's that. It's a little wild today, but this is where I will leave you. Here's to finding more spice and to embracing the things that we love and what makes us interesting. I will see you next week when we read Haven by Rebecca Weatherspoon. Thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. Also, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will go a long way to help the show, and I can help bring you more fun episodes. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwanghyun Cho, and Hopelessly Romantic is an Age with K production. Remember, it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.